Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Second Take Variety Hour.
The Second Take Variety Hour is filmed in front of a live studio audience.
Welcome to the Second Take Variety Hour, the only show on the internet, I think, that is still recorded within my kitchen. I'm Sebastian.
I'm Andy Schussler. Hello.
I'm Jordan. Hello to all of you out there in internet radio land.
There was a brief moment where I stopped and thought, are there any other shows that are recorded in my kitchen that I should be aware of?
Are there any other shows on the internet? I'm not even sure about that.
I mean, technically, regular Second Take is a different show.
Yeah, I can canon it in my head as the same RSS feed, I guess. I don't know.
Is that what we're basing it on now?
That's the criteria that I've just decided right now I am. So if you're joining us for the very first time, what we do on the Variety Hour is pretty much it's open form review content. We expose ourselves to different forms of media.
To our audience.
And then, yeah, have a bit of a chat about some good stuff and some bad stuff that we've come across. Today is, I think, mostly going to be a positive episode from what the lineup looks to be.
I've been inspired. We've been watching the Terminator series these last couple of weeks, and I've wanted to find some good sci-fi, some good time travel, and I did just that. Amazon surprised me, Amazon Prime, whatever the streaming service is called, wherever you are. Surprised me, it's got a lot of good sci-fi on there, and I'd like to talk about two time-traveling films that are absolutely brilliant.
Perfect. And what were you bringing in, Jordan?
So I have been binging an ABC sitcom called The Goldbergs.
I've heard of it, but that's as far as that goes. Like, I've heard that name before, so you have to...
I'll enlighten you on it later on. And very, very good.
Mine is a very positive chat because I'm going to be dredging up an old review that was done on this podcast and revoking my previous not recommend into a recommend.
Ooh.
So, you can read in the title. This is more just a surprise for my host. You can see what film I'll be talking about.
I have my suspicions.
Yeah, I think I've spoken to you guys about it briefly here and there over the past couple of weeks, but this is now officially I'm addressing the record.
So Mortal Kombat Annihilation is now a not recommend from you.
No, it's now actually a double secret probation recommend.
If you don't do it, you're doing yourself a disservice.
I love that movie so much. I can roll into it if you'd like.
No, leave it as a surprise. We'll do you last.
You're the main event, Seb.
Oh, God. I mean, typical.
Well, let me start off then. I'll talk about two sci-fi films, two time travel films that I absolutely loved. They're low budget. They're very small focused. It's a tight cast. The first one is called Time Trap. Starts off very slowly. There's about a half an hour of not so much exposition, just getting to know everybody. And I was a little bit disappointed going into it. But after that, my God, it just makes sense that you've gotten to know these characters, because then they play out the scenario. What happens is there's this school professor. He's organizing this camping trip or field trip for his students, but he cancels last minute, just goes on ahead. And the next day, a couple of days later, nobody's heard from him, so the students go off after him to find out what's happened. We get a little bit of backstory that his parents went missing when he was a young'un, and they were sort of explorers and archaeologists or you know, spelunkers anyway. They went to investigate this cave and then they never came back. It was presumed that they were kidnapped or whatever. And now this professor has been missing for a couple of days, so the kids go off after him. They get they get into this cave. They're sort of abseiling down and they're going down. One of them is a young boy who's sort of left in the car because it's a little bit dangerous for him to go abseiling, or he doesn't want to, or for whatever reason. And they have a radio to keep in touch with each other. But after about half an hour inside this cave, they can't talk to him. He can't talk to them, or it's all garbled. Nobody knows what's going on. They eventually discover, again, after only being in this cave for like an hour and a half or something, his video camera, and it's got days of footage on there, and it's years old. Right? They also find his body, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Was it fatal?
Yes.
Oh, God. How fatal?
Yeah. Very fatal. The fatalest you can possibly be.
Is he okay?
It's kind of weird that the movie, you know, killed off a young kid. They save him in the end. I don't want to spoil anything for the film.
Spoiled it all.
I don't want to spoil anything, but I also want to tell you about the plot exactly.
Well, let's just say spoiler warning for, what was it called again, sorry?
Time Trap.
Spoiler warning for Time Trap. If you don't want to listen to it, we're not going to put the timing in the thing. Just hit the skip button a few times.
I kind of have to, you know, do spoilers to reveal the plot.
It's a time travel movie. It's hard not to, yeah.
Basically, what's going on is that inside of this cave, there's like this time barrier where time slows down ridiculously slowly, right? They manage to get to a part of the cave where they can see out to the open air, and it's just flicking on and off, you know, a couple of seconds of light, a couple of seconds of dark, right? And you think, okay, you know, weird that this is going on, but that's just a few days, you know, it's a day every time it happens. Then somebody notices that it's actually a line coming across, and it's in different places, you know, a few times of the year, a few times of that cycle. And what they realize is that every flicking on and off of the light is a year passing. A year is passing every, you know, sort of 2 seconds or so while they're inside this cave. And they eventually meet up with their professor, who also finds his parents, who they've disappeared into this cave, and we see a nice little scene where there's conquistadors trapped in this thing as well through another sub-level that's, you know, moving even slower than this level. And they find the Fountain of Youth in this place. That's what this place was created to house, this Fountain of Youth that is genuinely regenerative, and it brings back the dead kid to life and heals all their wounds and
what
such.
What killed the dead kid? Do we know?
He fell.
Oh, okay. That was like, because it sounds like he would have just been gone for a couple of hours his time.
When they were descending, their ropes were severed.
Oh,
when they were descending, because as they go through this barrier, the top of the rope is having years of friction, you know, for every few seconds that they're climbing on it. So it just collapses, it just withers away.
Interesting. Okay.
It's a really neat idea. And when you're watching it, it really starts to make sense. It's a bit slow in the beginning, but it pays off. And it's a high recommend from me if you like good sci-fi. Because it's just them methodically going through and, okay, trying to establish what exactly is going on, right? You're sort of ahead of them as the audience, maybe, but it's nice to see them very logically as kids. It's not a kids movie, and they're not dumbing it down, but they're just kind of working out what's going on, and you're along for the ride. It's very clever, very well done, with a nice little payoff at the end.
Okay. And there's another.
I just got Prime, so I'll have to check it out.
Please do, because it is well worth your time if you like good sci-fi.
I know this is a positive episode, but I have a bone to pick with Prime. It's the fact that half the movies on there you have to pay extra for as well.
Isn't
it's
that ridiculous?
So yeah.
I was going through Eddie Murphy's whole catalogue. I was doing... I was writing another show about Vampire, and I thought, oh, Vampire in Brooklyn, I'd really like to watch it. Nah, you got to pay for it $5. Golden Child, got to pay $5. Beverly Hills Cop, you got to pay $5.
And I'll say, most of these movies are a little bit cheaper on YouTube to pay for.
Yeah.
And it's just
but
like,
they're all around the same price. Yeah, but yeah. I can't believe that they're available, but you have to pay for them.
What's the point?
Well, I guess it's... Aliens I had to buy on Amazon Prime because nobody else had it.
Yeah, it feels like crazy talk.
Yeah.
I'm like, I mean, hey, you did better than I did with my version of Aliens that had hard-coded Russian subtitles into it. We'll never know how I got that copy. That's not the point. The point is I had it. But you had another movie as well, didn't you?
Another movie.
So that was Time Trap.
That was Time Trap. Quite good. Time Lapse is a good suspense film. These three young adults, right? Two guys, one girl. They're living in this complex. One of them is the manager of the place, and they know each other through school or whatever. They're all living together now. And the girlfriend and the girl is the girlfriend of the complex manager. They have a neighbor across the road who hasn't been paying his rent or hasn't been answering, you know, hasn't been collecting his mail or whatever. And they know he's a scientist, but whenever introduced to him, you know, physically as an actor. Eventually they go over to investigate his place, and what they find is a camera that takes photos of 24 hours into the future.
Ooh.
It produces a photo, and what it has taken is transpiring 24 hours in the future.
So
they get a snapshot, you know, of their place because the camera is set up on their living room window. And they have a photo of something that hasn't happened yet. They don't realize it for the first couple of times, but then, you know, they sort of connect the dots and hold on a second. This is what's going on.
Let's say hypothetically, I set my Christmas tree up in this corner and it's set up today, but it won't be set up tomorrow. If I were to take a picture of my Christmas tree today, the photo would develop and the tree wouldn't be there. Is that correct?
Okay. Correct.
All right. Just make sure I get the concept. Yeah.
So how would you use a machine like that?
If you knew
there was a place where you could put any information you like or do whatever you like, and it's going to tell you 24 hours into the future what exactly is going to happen, what would you use?
I would immediately go to my TV at 6 p.m. when the lotto's on and take a photo of my TV screen.
That's basically what happens with the other guy friend. He's into horse racing and horse betting and things like that. So he starts posting.
You make
the
your own
results.
Almanac, respectively. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The complex manager is an aspiring artist, but he's got a lot of writer's block, painter's block, whatever you want to call it. So he uses it to see images that he paints in the future to get inspired now to paint those things.
Oh my God, he Bill and Ted's himself.
Yeah, he ends up looking at the Polaroid to recreate the paintings as he's doing them. And of course, the bookie gets wise to the whole thing eventually because this guy's getting a whole heap of winnings where he used to be losing quite a lot, and he comes over just interested what's going on, and eventually he gets wind of this machine and starts to just coerce them into playing along and posting the results of fights and other things for them, and it plays on from there. I'm not going to tell you anymore because it takes a very nice turn.
It seems like such a wholesome concept.
It's so good. It's so suspenseful. You know, it's acted brilliantly, and the whole thing is just intensely focused on this one room with this one particular line of sight, and all based around it. You know,
so is it a security camera? Is it, or
it's this huge fuck off machine that takes up an entire room?
Wait, it was just in there when they moved in?
In the scientist in the neighbor's basement.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay,
but it's pointing into their living room window.
That's weird. Why was that happening? Did we find out why that was the case?
I guess he was calibrating it or whatever.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah,
I'll have to look.
Really good.
And the good,
really
news
good
is,
story.
I can
time lapse
to Amazon and search "time" and find two good movies. Apparently, so that's, I'm sure I'll also find some trash.
No, don't just search "time" because you'll get a lot of trash. Yeah.
Well, Jordan, what you got?
So I recently discovered and just wound up binging a sitcom called The Goldbergs. Just sort of stumbled upon it. I'm like a big fan of Kevin Smith, and he directed a couple episodes. So I was like, oh, I'm going to check out the episode that he directed, which wound up being all about the 80s Batman movie, which I love. So it was just like, this works for me. Like going into the show, like I didn't recognize anyone in it aside from like George Segal, who was in like Just Shoot Me.
Oh yeah, as the dad.
Yeah, he's like the granddad in this show. And what's the other dude's name? Jeff Garlin, who's in like Arrested Development and like Curb Your Enthusiasm and stuff like that. Rest of the cast, no idea who they were, but they're all great. Like it, so it's made by this dude called Adam Goldberg, who I think he wrote that movie Fanboys, which is like the, it's like a Star Wars.
Another one, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly what it was about. I remember seeing it though.
One of their friends is Terminal.
Yeah,
Yeah, then he dies and he didn't get to see Phantom Menace come out.
That's right, yeah. And they go on like a road trip to try to get him to like get like Lucas to show him the movie before he dies. It's a cool little comedy movie.
Doesn't he? No, he does die, doesn't he, at the beginning?
I can't remember.
And then they go on the pilgrimage in his name or something, but...
Yeah, it's something like that, yeah.
Seth Rogen plays four characters in it, all adversaries to these guys. It's really weird.
Yeah. And basically like, the show's just like based on like his life as a child. It's all about like his family. It's set in like the 80s. Basically when he was a kid, and like he's like a really avid like little like amateur filmmaker and stuff like that, so the kid's always like making home movies and stuff.
Okay.
Really early on in the show, it's more about the kid, like Adam, and like his relationship with George Garland's character, like his granddad, because they're like really really close. And then like as the series sort of goes along, it just like branches out more about like the family and all their different interactions and stuff like that. But being based in the 80s, like they just like use so many like different bits of like pop culture and stuff for like the main sort of storylines, which all are based on like his real life experience. And so it's really, really fun because they'll do little bits as well, like at the end of like episodes where like they'll have like quick little interviews with like the real people from the show about like those stories and like recreations of like his home movies and stuff like that. But it's super, super funny show. Like I didn't expect to like it because I don't usually enjoy like those like sitcoms that are based around like a family and that sort of thing, because like a lot of them aren't that good unless you're like This or Modern Family's all right as well. I don't mind that show, but yeah, it's really, really, really good. Like it's one of those shows where it's been on for a long time but also hasn't really dipped in quality. Yeah, it's in like its seventh season now, I think. And like I've kind of gone through all of it at this point, and like it doesn't really dip in quality. I think the only reason it's not more popular, I think, is because I don't think you can really stream it here. Like, I think the only place you can really get it is probably on, like, 7 Plus, I think I saw it. Uh-huh. And I don't know if it's on any channels here, like, aside from maybe, like, somewhere on Foxtel you might be able to find it. But if you can track it down, it's a really, really fun show, especially if you like, 80s, like, pop culture and stuff like that, because there's just so much of it.
My question is, well, two questions. Is there canned laughter?
No.
Okay.
Which is what probably makes it. Like, yeah. It's just a straight sitcom with no canned laughter or anything like that.
And is it sort of framed, I mean, obviously it's in the 80s, but is it like that 70s show where it's kind of just like making fun of like
quite a bit, yeah. Like there is a lot of stuff where they kind of poke fun at it. They'll like make jokes about like things that were big in the 80s, like, oh, this is never going to die. But like obviously being current, yeah, like it's very similar to that 70s show in a sense, except that it doesn't have like the sort of canned laughter and that sort of thing. And it's probably a bit more of, probably has like a bit more of an emotional kind of side of it than that 70s show does as well, because it's like all based around like the family and like how they all interact with each other. Like the mother's really, really overbearing, so they always do like different stories where you know, like the kids obviously like just get upset about it because she like won't leave them alone, and she is really annoying. Like
I was just reading a couple of the more favorable reviews that were comparing it to The Wonder Years.
Yeah, you could do that. I've only seen like a few episodes because I'm probably like just missed The Wonder Years, I think, when I was growing up.
Okay.
But from what I've seen of it, I'd say it's pretty similar. Kind of like a modern take, being that it's made now, but would be pretty similar, yeah.
And obviously it's funny, right?
The Wonder Years too was made in the 90s, about the 70s.
True, yeah, actually, good point. But yeah, I would say it's akin to that, but very, very fun show. Like, especially if you watch like a couple episodes and you enjoy it, it won't take much for you to just be like, keep watching it.
Okay.
It's just sort of become like that show now that I watch like just in the evening, like when I'm going to sleep. Because like I kind of cycle through shows like that. Like I was doing a rewatch of Scrubs and then I finished it and I just started it again. And then I was like, I'm going to check out this show. And then I've just been pretty much watching it like most evenings since. Yeah, really, really good. Worth checking out.
I'm definitely going to, purely because I'm in need of another episodic sort of show to get through. And looking at it being like sitcom size, it says like the episode's like 20 odd minutes.
So yeah, it's regular 20 minute sitcom. Everything's back to normal at the end of the episode. Like it all just comes through. But yeah, all the characters are like really, really enjoyable as well. Like there's no, you know, like when you watch a show and you're like, there's a bunch of good characters, but then there's just certain ones that you're just like, I can't stand this person.
Yes.
All the main characters in the family like have their own little like sort of niches that you're like, yeah, I like that about them. Like none of them are like really, really annoying. Aside, the mum is a bit hard at the start, but once you kind of figure out what she is and why she's like that, it's much easier to digest.
80s mums.
Yeah, that's it.
I didn't have an 80s mum.
80s Jewish mother.
Very, oh my goodness. Yeah.
can be a bit taxing, but it's a great show. Highly recommend.
I'm on board.
Yeah. Well, speaking of highly recommending things, I have a redaction to make, or not a redaction,
correction.
I've got a correction.
An apology.
A recanting.
Yes. So I'm going to be changing one of my strongest, furious not recommends into a really strong recommendation based on a rewatching of the director's cut, if you will, the extended edition of a particular film. Andrew, don't get too excited. It's a film you hate either way.
I want Tenderhooks. I need to know, Seb.
Oh, I'm going to tell you, but like, you're going to hate this film regardless. I rewatched the ultimate cut of Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
I told you you would not like this. And
I thought it was something good, Seb.
Well, now it is.
It makes all the difference, doesn't it? 100%
all right, makes the
sell
difference.
Sell it.
Original problems with the first one. Both are long films. Let's be very clear. I'll try to get the run times up while I'm ranting here, but both are...
I don't think I can read a number that high, Seb.
Oh, they're ridiculously long.
Like 200 minutes, aren't they? Like 3.5 hours long.
Yeah, they're really... Yeah. Well, the ultimate cut is closer to that, yeah. So theatrical cut is 2 hours 32.
Okay.
I'll have to find what the extended one is, but it's a... Oh, it's 183 minutes versus 151.
Jeez, for 3 hours.
Yeah, and what it does is everything makes sense. So a lot of things just happened in the first cut because characters are going to do a thing because they do a thing, and occasionally you can get by in a movie with that. This film had a lot of those moments, so you wouldn't really know why a character was doing something apart from the plot needed them to do a thing, and. So everyone felt really inconsistent and that they were just going through the motions just to get from A to B. What this extra time added in does is it actually gives every fucking character motivation. And when you know why they are doing what they are doing, it makes literally all the difference in this film. Because suddenly you're not watching 2.5 hours of random actions and no and random consequences, but okay. You're actually seeing a chess game between all these different characters maneuvering around each other to get all these different results they want. And then the ending happens and everything just works out.
When I watched it made me angry.
The first version?
No, like the new one, I was like, why didn't they just put this out? It would have saved so much trouble and so much negativity towards the film.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's fully contained within itself. You can watch Man of Steel beforehand because that's the only one before then, but you know what happens because it's in the intro of this film, shows you Superman fucking up an entire city. Like, you get that. You don't need really see anything else. Everyone knows what Superman is anyway, so it's not like he's getting any new information there. Like, Lex Luthor just makes sense in this film, and when suddenly your antagonist is doing things that have a cause behind them that aren't just daddy hit me once, it really, really, you know, it shows for the entire product. It's still beautifully shot. I don't think we ever, when we did the original review, we weren't criticizing how it looked. It was always just the issue of the fact that characters were just existing.
Who's the director?
Zack Snyder.
This is the Snyder.
Yeah. So
this is the fictitious Snyder cut.
Well, no,
Snyder cut's Justice League, isn't it?
Justice League, which is the reason I went back and watched this, because it's being greenlit. It's currently being fixed up, and it's coming out as either a 4 or 6 hour long episode thing through HBO is what they're redoing Justice League through. So
yeah, that's right.
That was the cause for me to go back and I was like, okay, everyone's pushing for this. Oh, because I did watch this cut again.
So
when it came out on DVD originally.
You're saying 28 minutes of footage makes all the difference.
Yeah.
And changes a strong not recommended into a strong recommend.
The issue with the original was characters were just doing things.
Yeah.
Okay. And you didn't know why. They never tried to explain you. And show, don't tell, blah, blah, blah. And they are showing us what they're doing. But if you don't know why or what the end goal is for everyone, it really matters.
Surely that's a part of showing.
When
you identify somebody's motivation.
Yeah. But yeah, and I love this film. It still has that goofy Martha reveal, but you know what?
Right.
When they're able to extend and extrapolate all these extra little things, by the time you get to the Martha thing,
it doesn't bother you as much.
It doesn't, because Batman's fully rounded out as a character to the point where that all kind of clicks. Mm-hmm. It's incredible what an extra, like, less than half an hour can do for a film that's that long. But
okay.
It's one of the rare cases where the director's cut actually matters.
I love watching people recut trailers and you know, do like a Mrs. Doubtfire as a horror film.
Yeah.
And a little bit of music, a few little scenes out of order or cut at just the right moment. And yeah, it can completely change the tone.
Yeah. But yeah, good shit. I would recommend it. I mean, I know they're not really your cup of tea anyway, though, Andrew, being like the superhero genre. This is one of the more grounded ones in a sense that it is, the story itself is at its core an emotional story. It's not really about the superhero stuff. That's obviously there. They have a huge fuck off fight scene. There is this giant monster at the end as well. Like that stuff does exist in it. But with this extra cut, it pivots the movie from that spectacle into a character piece.
How does Batman go up against Superman and not be pulverized immediately?
He plans ahead. He just plans
the fuck. What are you talking about? Superman,
have you seen it?
Superman can move faster than light. He can travel back in time.
Well, not this one, but yes.
He has super laser eyes. He cannot be penetrated. He cannot die unless, you know, being, you know, exposed to kryptonite.
I can field this really easily. Two ways. Superman is in this
Superman
fight.
Is a ridiculous hero.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
In this fight, Superman is literally not trying to kill Batman. He's trying to get him to help him. Batman's attacking him. And he's literally got kryptonite. So he has weakened him down to the stage where he can beat the shit out of him. Mm-hmm. So that's the point. Superman wasn't going in with the intent of killing him.
Okay.
He was actually trying to recruit Batman to help him. But because of other reasons in the film.
To do what?
Because Lex Luthor's whole plan has started and he needed help.
Superman can't defeat Lex Luthor on his own?
Lex had kidnapped both his partner and his mother. Lex had kidnapped
And he
them.
Couldn't
yeah.
melt through the vault there that was reasons. Holding them?
There was reasons. It's justified within the film, I promise you.
Did he coat them in like a kryptonite dip or something that he just couldn't get close to them?
No, it was the, I think there was a bomb. Or something?
Why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you just put a kryptonite collar on every single person that...
Just everyone ever.
Yeah.
Because low-key radiation.
And that's it. Superman is completely useless. It's such a ridiculous hero. He's either too powerful or too vulnerable.
Yep.
I hate Superman.
He's not bad in this film. I don't like Man of Steel still. I still think that movie's really preachy. And it bothers me. But this film, actually, weirdly, the new cut fixes Superman for me a lot.
Yeah, I'll back you up on that.
Yeah,
makes make less a big of a difference dick. To the movie. If you're already like adversely hate Superman, like it's probably not going to help. But for the overall enjoyment of the movie, it makes a massive difference.
All of your criticisms of Superman, though, are correct.
Yeah, valid.
It's my least favorite hero for that reason.
I don't like Superman.
I think
at all.
I'll go back and watch Henry Cavill in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and that way I'll be exposed to Superman v. Batman.
That's the one. That's true. Perfect. But yeah, it's.
I'll do it.
So there you go. we are recanting of a thing. So that
rewriting interesting. History.
It's still, I mean, Alex and Zane both also highly not recommended that film. So I'm now in the minority again. Instead of us all, that was a 2-hour review of that movie, by the way. It was so, I think it's our longest review we've ever done. And now it's useless. 1/3 of it just changed.
But you're the only surviving member from those days, so
Alex is still kind of here.
Your word completely counts.
That's true. I can rewrite history.
When he shows himself, he can have an opinion.
Well, Alex did like Suicide Squad, and that movie has not changed me. That is still trash. Good looking trash, but trash.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that movie, but I think it's just that I liked looking at it.
When you watch that movie next, I want you to keep this in mind. Nobody in that universe knows how to land a helicopter. For every single helicopter that takes off, they only crash land.
Yeah.
I'm not joking. I think someone's picked up by the helicopter in the prison, but we don't see the helicopter land from memory. It has landed and the propellers are spinning when someone gets off of it.
Is this just a universe where helicopters never land? They're just perpetually in the air.
Or crashing into the ground. Seriously, the second they get to the city and anytime a member of the Suicide Squad is in a helicopter, it will only crash land. Oh, the Joker's here. Oh, he's gone to helicopter. Oh, it crash landed. That's the only way they can do it.
Helicopters don't land in that universe, Seb.
They it's don't. Canon. They just slam into the earth. But that's me. Good. Go watch it. Go watch the long version.
I concur.
Yeah. Do it, Andrew. You have to. I'll watch 2 time travel movies and still finish first.
Well, find us on Instagram at Second Take Podcast, or if you live in the future, you can tweet us at Second Take TNC.
You can hit the Facebook at facebook.com/secondtake. You can also follow me on Twitter if you so shall desire at JordanMSPP.
You can follow me at Bastion_James. secondtakepodcast.com. Send us an email at secondtakepodcast@gmail.com or support the show at patreon.com/secondtake. Now, we're going to be back on Monday with a less positive spin when we go into T3. And then, yeah. But hey, good news. After we do the Terminator franchise, well, the three films of it, well, not the 12, we are rolling into the Scooby-Doo duology. So I'm so excited. I made the intros to those episodes, those Scooby-Doo films, like months ago in advance.
The TV show is great.
Sure.
I have nothing but fond memories.
And the movie is also great.
Great at stinking.
Yep.
Oh, come on.
All right, that's the one. Second Take Podcast is recorded within the Moreton Bay region of Queensland, Australia, and acknowledges this region's original owners, namely the Jinnabara, Cubby Cubby, and Yugara people. Second Take Podcast respectfully acknowledges the traditional custodians of these lands, and we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, for they hold the memories, the traditions, the cultures and hopes of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.